Welcome to the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast, formerly known as Chapters of Motherhood. I'm your host, Veronica Moss, and I've returned with an evolved vision. I'm currently in studio passionately crafting brand new episodes set to officially debut in the spring of 2024. We now focus on promoting spiritual growth in all areas of life, including career, relationships, and mindful parenting. While you're waiting for the new season to kick off, why not revisit some of the classics? We've got your favorite episodes from Chapters of Motherhood lined up for your enjoyment. So sit back, relax, and let the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast lead you on a journey of self-discovery and growth. Stay tuned. Welcome to your renewed spiritual sanctuary, the Spiritual Lifestyle Podcast. Chapter 7, Mom to an Angel, Loss of a Child. Welcome to Chapters of Motherhood Podcast. In this episode, we have our first guest to share her motherhood story on a very difficult subject. We are joined by Andrea Romero. She was married to my brother, and even though since they have divorced, she is and always will be the mother to my nephew and my goddaughter. Please welcome Andrea.
Hi, thank you for having me on your podcast. Actually, I feel really blessed to be on your podcast. And to talk about Mikey. I think it's more to talk about Mikey because anytime that I can get to talk about Mikey is a blessing to me. He's been in heaven for 15 and a half years. He passed away January 22nd, 2004. And it's been a tough road. So Mikey was my first son. He was born July 27th, 1998. He was born on a Monday. It was a sunny, beautiful day. And you were actually there in the delivery room, which was awesome.
I was there. I was like your doula. I do remember. I was so, and I felt so lucky because it was a fluke. I was going there to turn in an application to work at the hospital. And Mike had told me, hey, we're, you know, in labor and delivery. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll come by. And I got to be there while you were pushing. He said that you had been pushing for 30 minutes already.
Yeah, I think I pushed for 45 minutes to an hour. So that was tough. I think I was in labor for 24 hours, just about 24 hours. Yeah. So he was born on a summer Monday morning.
And how did you feel? Was it like an easy labor or, you know, easy delivery, like pushing? I know that you were in labor for like 23 hours. And when I was there, you were still pushing. And I remember that you got sick. That was from the epidural.
Do you remember? I don't remember that.
You don't remember? Yes, no. I remember. They wrapped up the baby and they put him in your arms and you said, I'm going to get sick. And you turned around and you gave me the baby. And I was like, oh, my gosh, is she OK? And they're like, it's OK. This happens because of the epidural.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, I don't remember that. I don't remember much. It's been a long time. And I know I should remember this. I only had two kids, but I don't remember that.
Well, you were exhausted.
Yeah. You know what? I was so exhausted. I do remember that, being so exhausted. It was, for me, it was my first child. I was a teen mom. I was 17. It was extremely hard. Labor was hard. Delivery was hard. And it was a relief to have him and him to be here in the world.
And when did you feel that mother-baby bond? Was that instant? Because for me, with Adam, with my first, it took a few days.
You know what? I'm going to say that I felt like it took a few days too, if not even a few weeks, I would say. I know, you know, when I brought him home from the hospital, I mean, I loved him as soon as I seen him. He was the cutest thing I've ever seen. I just loved everything about him. But I know, you know, I was a teen mom, so it's different, you know. But
you were scared.
I was scared. I was like, this was something completely new. I do remember taking him home, you know, and I know that the nurses had encouraged me to breastfeed, but it was just so odd for me to do something like that, you know. I didn't get to do that. I just didn't want to do it because it was uncomfortable for me. I tried it, I think, you know, one day when I brought him home from the hospital, but after that, it was just too uncomfortable. So I didn't get to, I think it took a couple weeks for me to bond with him. And then after that, it was, we were connected.
So as a newborn, would you think that, or would you describe him as an easy newborn, even though you were young, it was your first experience? Would you consider that newborn stage and infant up to a year easy? Was it hard? Were you just learning as you were going?
I think Mikey was an easy baby. I think he was a good baby, an easy baby. I think for me, it was hard because I was learning as I was going along. I was a teen mom. So it was just, you know, I was exhausted. I didn't know what to do. You know, there were so many things I didn't know how to do properly. But I mean, I don't know. He was a really easy baby up until he turned, I would say probably about a year and a half, two is when I started to notice he was a little bit more active and, you know, just very hyper.
Yeah, that's one thing I do remember about Mikey. He was so hyper and he was running back and forth but he was such a cutie. Like he was just such a cutie little boy. And to me, it was normal because that's how Adam was. He was very hyper as well.
I remember him just being super hyper and he just had so much energy. And I remember we would take him out and he would run and, you know, he would never sit still. But, you know, now that he's gone, those are the things that I really do miss. I miss everything about him. Even, you know, the lows.
Even the hard times. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember I babysat only one time when he was, I think about a year old, and he cried the whole time. I didn't know what to do. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Like, hurry up, Mike and Andrea. I don't know what to do.
You know, and that's the thing. I remember your mom watching him too when he was around 4 or 5 months. And she said the same thing. He cried and he cried. And it wasn't until I came and got him is when he stopped crying.
Yes.
And he, you know, he felt comfortable with me there. I think he was just used to me and just didn't want to be with anybody else but me.
Yeah. So there was definitely that bond where he just wanted mommy and that was pretty much it. Well, and he wanted dad too.
Oh yeah, totally.
When did you start noticing that something was different or something was wrong?
So Mikey, he learned how to walk when he was 11 months. He was off the bottle when he was, you know, 2 and a half, I think. I can't remember, but I believe it was about 2 and a half. Around the same time, he was potty trained as well. He did everything, you know, on time. I noticed that he wasn't talking. He wasn't catching, you know, how can I say it? Well, one, I noticed that he never stopped drooling. I remember him being around 3 or 4 and he was still drooling, or 3 years old and he was still drooling.
Right.
I noticed that he wasn't picking up on his speech. He should have been further along in his speech when he was 3 years old and he wasn't. Well, and the thing, I had taken him to the doctors a few times and it was mainly because of the drooling. It was so much drooling. I mean, he would soak a shirt. Everything he wore, he would soak. And I remember I took him, you know, a few times and the doctor said, you know, well, maybe you should take him to the dentist. And I said, no, this is not something that has to do with the dentist. It's drooling. It's something else. And I knew something wasn't right. So I remember taking him to the doctor a few more times and they, you know, other doctors said other things. You know, maybe, you know, some kids just drool or, you know, whatever. And
Right. It
wasn't until he was 3 years old, he was playing, you know, with his cousin. During this time also, I noticed that he started to get real shaky. He was off balance. And that's another thing that I noticed that just wasn't right. And I remember taking him to the emergency and I know that they, you know, oh no, I'm going ahead of myself. So I remember him, he was playing with one of his cousins. I was at the gym and I remember him falling. I guess he had fell when my mom was babysitting him. And when I came back, she's like, I had tried to call you, you weren't answering. And I said, no, I didn't know. So she's like, he fell, he's bleeding. He had a cut on the middle of his forehead. And she's like, take him. So I took him to the emergency. He was a little off balance. And when I took him to the emergency, I said, you know, he fell because he was off balance. And I said, I've been trying to tell the doctor something's not right with him. And that's when they sent us to the neurologist. That was the first time we were sent to the neurologist. And he was around 3 years old. So once we finally, you know, had an appointment to see the neurologist a couple weeks later. And the neurologist at that time diagnosed him with seizures. He had a form of seizures. And that was the first time that we had, you know, knew something was wrong. But Mike and I knew something wasn't right all along. We just, you know, no one was believing us.
Right. Actually, I also remember going with you to the doctor, because what I remember them telling you is he's forgetting to swallow. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard. So I remember going with you to the doctor and pretty much advocating for you and for him, because I told him, like, he forgets to swallow. That makes no sense. And or maybe it was later on when they said, oh, he has an allergy to the sun. Try to keep him out of the sun. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. And right around when he was 3 years old, when I noticed something was different, other than the drooling, was he asked me for chocolate milk. And so I made him some chocolate milk. And then right after I made it for him, he started kind of like spilling it everywhere. And I yelled, I'm like, Mikey, what are you doing? And my mom right away told me, oh, no, no, it's not his fault. You don't understand. He's having seizures. I'm like, seizures? Since when? Like, what's happening? Like, I don't see him, you know, doing anything. And then she pointed out, like, oh, if you see his eyes are shaking back and forth, he's having a seizure. And then a few, oh, you know what? I'm going to let you go ahead and finish the symptoms. So were the symptoms obvious, or they were quite subtle?
They were. And, you know, when he was having seizures, he was diagnosed with seizures. And it wasn't I always thought a seizure was where you have, you know, large convulsions and you fall on the floor. Those weren't the type of seizures he had. He was diagnosed with seizures and ataxia. And ataxia was because he was so, like, he would walk. And it was weird because when he was young and he learned how to walk, he was so steady. And as he got older, he got completely off balance. And, you know, it had gotten so bad that, you know, right before he passed, he really couldn't even walk. He was so off balance. His seizures
really quickly,
were...
Andrea, can you explain what ataxia is?
I don't really even know how to explain it. All I know is it's when you're off balance, you can't walk straight. I don't know the proper terminology for it.
It would be like a neurological...
Yeah, it has something to do, but that's what he was. And so Sarah's been diagnosed with that, his sister. The seizures were eye movement, twitching of the face. Sometimes he would have a laughing seizure, so he would laugh when he's having a seizure.
Yes.
As the years gone on, his seizures progressed to bigger and bigger seizures. So they had put him on medication, Depakote, and that was the first seizure medicine that he was put on that when he was three and a half, I believe.
Okay. And were there any other symptoms that started to show right around that age?
I don't remember.
Well,
Do
there
you?
Was a... Yeah, there was this one time that I took him down the street to the liquor store down the street, and I told him, oh, you know, come on. I guess my mom was having a hard time. And so I told her, you know, I'll take him to go get an ice cream. And so I took him with me, and, you know, he walked off and he was just right down the aisle. And I'm like, Mikey, I'm right here. And he couldn't see me. And I was like, Mikey, I'm right here. Like, it's me. It's your aunt. And I had to get very close to him. And then he smiled big and he realized it was me. So it was when he started losing his vision.
Do you remember what year or how old he was when he started to lose his vision?
It was about three and a half.
Three and a half. Yeah, he did start to lose his vision. He was never diagnosed with anything, but he started, because his sister's been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, but he was never diagnosed with that because they never did the test for that when he was alive. But he, around three and a half, he did start losing his vision, and within a year and a half, he was almost completely blind. He also had a little bit of hearing loss as well.
Yes.
So he was wearing hearing aids. So, but, you know, it seems like it was something that happened. I mean, when you're in it, it seems like it, I don't know, it's just different. But now that I look back on it, it happened so quickly. I mean, within a year and a half, you know, he was almost blind, couldn't walk,
and
on
he was
oxygen.
Falling a lot.
Yeah,
he was
falling a lot.
I remember he would fall a lot. And it did. It happened quickly, like in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange to talk about it and look back on it. You think like, oh my gosh. You know, it happened so fast, but when you're in it, it didn't seem like it.
Now, during this time, what were the doctors diagnosing him with? What did they think was happening?
So the doctor, at the time, he didn't have a diagnosis because he started to progress and he progressed really quickly. So I would take him back to the doctors, you know, he would see the neurologist regularly. And she one time brought us in and said, you know, I think we know what he has. And they diagnosed him with a disease called Batten's disease. And it's a progressive neurological disease. And up until the time he passed away, we thought he had Batten's. And it wasn't until he passed that we found out he didn't, but that was his diagnosis while he was alive, was Batten's disease.
And typically, what is a prognosis? Like, what did they tell you would happen with that kind of diagnosis?
With Batten's, within, you know, a few years, you don't survive it. It's a progressive neurologic disorder or disease. And anybody who has Batten's disease doesn't make it. And I think they were saying, I think the, you know, you don't make it past 18.
And at this time, or at that time, that is, how were you dealing with the situation being that, he was your firstborn and your boy?
You know, it almost seems like a fog now, but I was so young. I had him when I was 17. I was 20, 21 when he was started getting sick. I think I was around 20 when he, you know, was diagnosed with seizures first. And it just, I don't know. I feel like I almost, you know, I mean, it was weird.
Because you also had a newborn at the time that this was happening.
A newborn. She was a couple months when he was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So I remember it being very hard. It was hard on me. But it was, you know, you almost try to still continue to live your life. And for me, I didn't want to believe that, you know, when he was diagnosed with Batten's and when the doctors told us this is a disease that's not, he's not going to make it. Mm-hmm. You know, he won't make it. It's just like.
You didn't believe it.
No, I didn't. I think I lived in denial. I really did. Now that I look back, I was completely in denial.
And how did your husband at the time take it?
I think he was the same way. I think we were both in denial.
What about your family members around you?
You know, I think with my family, and that's another thing that was really, really hard, because I had a family that was very, very, very unsupportive. And I can understand where they're coming from. You know, this is the first person in our family on both sides, Mike's side and my side, who has someone with a special need. And my family didn't take it well. And they would tell me to get a second opinion. And you know what? I did. I did get a second opinion. And I did it to please them. And, you know, then they would say, no, you need to get another opinion. And, you know, that's when I started telling, you know, some of my family members would go with me, you know, because I was young and I don't think that they believed me, or they just didn't think that I knew what I was talking about or asking the right questions. So I would tell them, you know, come with me. I told my mom. I remember telling, you know, someone else to come with me, and they did. And, you know, they would ask questions, and, you know, they didn't like the answers they were getting. So they thought, you know, well, the doctors don't know what they're talking about or whatever. And it was real. I think that was probably the hardest part out of this whole ordeal, not ordeal, but this whole situation with Mikey and him, you know, getting sick and passing away, was no family support from my side of the family. Even till this day, 15 and a half years later, I still hear it, and I still don't talk to certain family members because of it. But you know what? I'm okay with it now. I mean, I wasn't at the time. It took a long time for me to accept that, you know, just some people don't understand, and that's okay. And I'm okay with it now. But at the time, I wasn't. I was sad. I would cry all the time. I would say, why can't people, you know, no one understands. And I wanted people to be on my side. I wanted them to be on my side. They're my family.
Right.
You know, even.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, I remember that I also didn't accept the diagnosis. And I remember going with my mom and dad with you guys and talking with the doctors and saying, well, it sounds to me, and I remember telling the doctors, being very confrontational, telling them, it sounds to me like you're just giving up, like you're just throwing your hands in the air and you don't know what to do next.
I remember that.
And they were offended. I remember they got offended, but it's like, you know, we need to know more, because there was Sarah and there was other, you know, nieces and nephews. And I thought, you know, we need to know what it is so that we can help him to make sure that, you know, his sister doesn't get it. And I remember them telling me his sister is absolutely fine. And I said, yeah, so was he at this age.
Yeah.
And I wasn't frustrated with you or Mike. I was frustrated with the doctors, because to me, it felt like they're not doing enough.
Yeah. And I think that's what my side of the family felt like, too, that the doctors weren't doing enough. But I mean, you know, there's so many different genetic diseases, and they don't know, you know, I remember when you went to the doctor, we went to the geneticist, and it was a clinical meeting. So they had the geneticist there, they had the neurologist there, and I think a social worker and another doctor. I remember them explaining to us that there's just so many different disorders and diseases that they just haven't,
they just didn't know.
Yeah, they just don't know.
And I guess that's the frustrating thing, was, like you mentioned, your family and my family, we didn't have any type of experience with special needs or genetic diseases. We didn't understand.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was, just like you mentioned, it was like 15 years ago. So it wasn't heard of even before, you know, a lot of information on the internet. So we couldn't even look it up if we wanted to.
Yeah. And I think, though, even though you guys didn't understand it. You know, your side of the family versus my side of the family was completely different. I mean, my side of the family, they didn't understand, but they're also, you know, they were so mean about it. They weren't, you know, it was just a totally different situation from your family. Your family didn't understand, but they tried to, and they tried to help.
You know, we were trying to help no matter what. Yeah.
And you guys try to be there for us.
Right. So tell me about like a typical day during his illness.
Well, as he progressed, I remember he still went to school up until he was five. So he turned five in July. I remember that. And I remember him starting school in September. And I think right in at the end of September, as I pulled him out of school, I just felt like it just wasn't helping and he was sick. It might have been earlier, but I think it was September. There's a lot of dates that I don't remember. But we pulled him out of school. He stayed home. The last, you know, 5 or 6 months, he just laid there. He didn't do much. And that was the hardest part. You know, you see, again, Mikey was so active. He was super hyper. He was, you know, I remember everybody called him a monkey because he was just always hopping all over the place. He just, you know, he would climb walls, climb fences, anything. He just was just super hyper. And then to see your son, you know, at the end of his, you know, well, I don't really know the time, but during this time, I remember the neurologist brought us in. He had went into the hospital because he was having a different type of seizure. And I remember he was hospitalized for a few days. And I remember the doctor talking to Mike and I and letting us know that they didn't think that there was much that they could do. They said his disease is progressing. And again, they thought he had Batten's and they wanted to send us home on hospice. And so that's what they did. Because you know what? I remember going into the doctor's office. Anything that bothered me or that wasn't normal, or, you know, that I was nervous about, I would take him to the doctors. And then so that he was hospitalized. And I remember them telling us that they were going to put him on hospice and that he only had so many months to live. And I remember freaking out. I don't know if you were there or who was there. I don't remember anybody there. I think your mom might have been there, actually. Mm-hmm. I think your mom was there. And I think we had Sarah at the hospital as well, because I remember going into an empty room and just crying. And, you know, Mike was in, you know, with Sarah, and I, you know, he might have been with Sarah and Mikey. And I just remember being in an empty room crying, and I couldn't believe it, you know. But even after that, I still was, you know, even after that shock, I still went in denial. I was still in denial about it. So they sent us home on hospice, and that's when they had a nurse come out once a week or twice a week, and then the doctor came out once a month.
And he was on oxygen at that time?
Yeah, during that time, they noticed that his oxygen level wasn't where it should be, and that he needed to be on oxygen. And I remember when he was on oxygen, I remember the hospice doctor came out and said, you know, we give him 4 months to live. And again, you know, I was like, no, you know, and I would cry and whatever, but I still, believe it or not, I was still in denial. And I didn't think that, you know, I thought he was going to live, you know, I don't know.
For years. Yes. Because yeah. I didn't know that they had given you a timeline of months. I really thought that it was going to be, you know, somewhere around 16, 18 years.
Yeah.
So when it started happening so quickly, I was like, what is it? Like, I don't understand what's happening. Why is it going so fast?
Yeah.
And I remember during Christmas time, I would assume it was part of your denial. He needed to wear a helmet because he went from being super hyper to not being able to hold up his head anymore.
Right.
And he would hit his head on the hard tile.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, why don't you put on his helmet? And you're like, he doesn't need it. I was like, why is she in so much denial? He needs it. He's going to hurt himself.
You know, not only was it denial, and that's what it was. It was in denial. But you see your kid with a helmet and you think like, you don't want to see your kid wearing a helmet. You don't want to see your kid wearing a diaper, you know, because we had to put a diaper on him. You know, he was 5 years old wearing a diaper. You know, because he would have accidents. So it was just like, you know, it was just weird. You know, I didn't want to see my kid wearing a helmet or a diaper.
Because it just made it all too real.
Totally. Yeah. And that's what it was. It just, you know, it was just, you don't want to accept it.
Make a wish. Do you want to talk about that?
I don't remember much about that. I do remember he was given Make a Wish. I don't remember when it was. I know it was in 2013, but I don't know what time of the year it was.
2003.
But I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. 2003.
It's okay.
2003. But I don't remember what month it was. But I do remember I think one of the therapy, the therapist, well, I can't remember who, but they put it in for us and we got it. And, you know, since he was sick and since he was I think he was under five. So we had wanted to go to Disney World and they said, well, you can go to Disneyland because he's not five yet. So we went to Disneyland and we were there for a few days. We got to go to Disneyland for 3 days in a row and stay at the Disneyland Hotel. And it was an awesome trip.
Right. And when I heard of the Make-A-Wish, I thought, okay, no, this is real. Like, they don't give you this Make-A-Wish if you got 16 years to go.
Did you really think that?
I did.
Yeah. And even with that, I still didn't think anything.
Right.
I just, you know, again, I was so, you know, I never wanted to accept it. I didn't even accept it up until, even when he was on hospice, I didn't accept it at all. I mean, I was able to talk about it like it was nothing, you know, because I didn't accept it.
So after Christmas, I do remember that because he would call me and I remember calling you, telling you that, okay, I'm getting off of work late. You know, I'm on my way there. And you telling me, you know, don't bother coming because he's sick. And I thought, okay, so I won't show up. Do you remember that? That was that was the last chance that I remember it, because that was my last opportunity to see him alive.
Really? And was in December?
No, it was in January. But yeah, I'm just remembering that it was after Christmas.
I do remember you coming to visit. You know, you came and visit and you brought him a huge Mickey Mouse because he left, yes. You know, Mickey. But I don't remember when that was. And I remember, you know, you and the family came.
Yeah, it was definitely before Christmas because I didn't want to wait. I'm like, I'm not going to wait. And I remember being told, oh, you should just wait until Christmas. I'm like, I'm not going to wait. I'm just going to give it to him right now. But then further along, I didn't go see him because he was already sick. And then I think 2 days later, like about 2 days later, he was in the hospital. Do you want to go over how he ended up in the hospital?
So the hospice doctor had told us that Mikey had 4 months to live. And the weirdest thing is he lived 4 months after the doctor told us that. But what happened was he had gotten sores on his butt. And I think it's because he wasn't moving around and he was wearing a diaper and a pull-up. And so he had gotten a couple sores on right above his butt, mm-hmm. You know, on his lower back. And he wasn't feeling well. And the nurse came out and put cream on there. And then he got a bunch of, you know, sores everywhere. And that's when around the time, I called the nurse back out. She came out and she said, well, he has the chicken pox. And at that time we told your mother to, you know, if she could take Sarah, because Mikey had the chicken pox and we didn't want her to get the chicken pox. So Sarah was over at your mom's house. And I remember taking him to the beach and it was just me and him and Mike was at work. And I remember, I think I went to Seal Beach and I had put him in his wagon and he wasn't feeling well. And I don't know why I decided to take him out, you know, knowing that he had chicken pox, but I did. Took him to the beach and I brought him home. And within a few days, I noticed that he wasn't breathing right. And I remember it so clearly. He was laying in bed. He was connected to the oxygen. And at this point, he was sleeping in our bedroom. So we had our bed and then off to the side, we had a small little toddler bed and he slept in that. And then we had his oxygen machine in the living room and we had it connected to him. Or we might have had it right by his bed. It was one that you plugged into the wall. Mm-hmm. And so he was in the living room or in the room and I remember Mike sleeping and I go, he doesn't sound right. He sounds like he's, you know, gonna choke on something. I didn't know what it was. And so I told Mike, I said, you know what, I'm gonna take him to the hospital. And Mike's like, okay. And I said, do you want to go or do you want to stay? And he's like, no, I'm gonna go with you. And I said, okay. So we got dressed, you know, we went to the hospital, and that was really the last time we seen Mikey awake. I remember him, they took him back right away, and I don't know why. I remember it being a full, you know, room of people waiting to be seen by the emergency. But I remember I went up to the counter and I said, you know, he's not feeling well. He sounds really bad. I don't know what's going on. And I said, he is on hospice, but we brought him in anyways. And so right away, we didn't even wait. They took us right into the emergency room. And I remember the doctor came and they checked his oxygen. And I remember we had brought oxygen with us to the hospital. We had, you know, a tank, one of those portable tanks, and they didn't, you know, they connected him to their oxygen. But before they had connected him, they had him on the oxygen and they seen his oxygen going low. So it went all the way down to 30. And they said, you know, he is on hospice. We can let him go now. And I said, no, no, do what you can for him. And they said, you know, it sounds like he has pneumonia. So he had chicken pox and pneumonia. So I said, no, do whatever you can. And they said, okay. So they, I will never forget his last words. And it's really hard. It hurts. But I remember him, they, you know, had to sedate him so they can start him on antibiotics for the pneumonia. And I remember him, they were holding him down so they can put oxygen and do whatever they needed to. And I remember him saying, help me, daddy, help me. And those were his last words.
Yeah, I remember Mike fighting as hard as he could to tell the doctors to do everything because those were his last words.
Yeah. So, you know, at the, you know, then they had to transfer him to the Sunset. We were at Kaiser, so they transferred him to Sunset because they didn't have a they didn't have the stuff there to, you know, to treat him. So I remember him. We had to wait for Children's Hospital paramedics to come get him just because they had all the equipment in their ambulance or whatever. And within an hour, we were over there. They took him quickly because they, you know, went with the sirens. And I remember me and Mike getting there a little while later. He was already in the room in the ICU. And I remember us going up to the ICU room, and they had him on the machines. I believe, and I don't know if you remember because I don't. Was he on the breathing machine right away?
I believe so. I remember I got the call and I happened to be working in West LA and I just went straight there. And I believe he was hooked up to everything. So he had the tube in his mouth. Yeah, down his throat.
Yeah, so he was on the breathing machine and, you know, they started him on antibiotics and he, you know, I thought he would come out of it and, you know, over the next few days, it just progressed. You know, his organs started to shut down. I remember one day his lungs collapsed, so they had to drain them. Or they filled up with liquid, and they had to drain one of his lungs. I remember them having to cut him open. And I remember walking into the room right when that was happening. So I seen them do that. And I remember the nurse looking, because I stayed there and I was just kind of shocked. And I remember one of the nurse asked the other nurse, who's that? And they said, that's the mom. And I remember them looking at me like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. But it was just like, I just happened to walk in on it. And, you know, it was just like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, a couple days in, they said he's not, his organs are shutting down. And I said, you know, they said he's not going to make it. You know, you guys need to make the decision to take him off the breathing machine.
And Mike wouldn't do it.
Is that what it was? I don't remember.
Mike wouldn't do it. He kept saying, no, you guys need to keep working on it. You need to keep doing things. You need to do something. And they pulled us all in for a meeting and to let us know that, you know, the one lung has already collapsed. The other one's in danger. The kidneys are shutting down. Yeah. All his organs are shutting down.
Yeah.
And I remember you telling him, you know, we need to let him go. And he kept saying, no, no, no. Until after that meeting, I did go to him. I said, Mike, you did do everything you can. You fought for him. You did everything you can. And they can't do anything more. He's suffering.
Yeah. And, you know, and I remember too having the meeting. I actually asked the doctors to have a meeting with our families because with both families, because on my side of the family, I had a couple family members that, you know, were harassing me, telling me, don't do this. You know, even if he, you know, he's on a ventilator or he's a vegetable, you take him home and he needs to be at home with you. And I remember being like, no, this is not, you know, we can't do this, you know.
I remember your family members getting very rowdy and yelling at you, like really yelling at you, where I stood in front of you. And I'm a lot shorter. No, people that are listening, I'm a lot shorter than Andrea. And the family member was a lot taller than both her and I. And I remember standing right in front and saying, that's not an option. If that was an option, we would take it. That is not an option.
Yeah.
You think she wants to do this?
Well, and I do. And I remember, you know, and thank you, because I do remember you coming to my defense because I was backed up into a corner. I had
literally,
you know, three people, you know, on me telling me, don't do this. And this is your child. What are you thinking?
Cussing and everything.
Yeah, everything. And I'm just like, I was like, didn't know. I couldn't defend myself. I didn't, you know. And I remember you stepping in and saying, you know what? You guys need to stop. I'm going to call security. Like, this is not going to happen. You guys. And I remember them trying to, you know, talk to you and you just like, we're not having it. And
I did. I signaled the nurse and the nurse came with security and took yeah. everybody out. But at that point, I was like, I don't care if you kick me out as well. Get them out so that she can spend her last few moments with her son.
Yeah. And I remember around that time, I don't really remember a whole lot, but I remember during, I don't know if it was that day or the day before, I had asked for the nurses or for the doctors if they could have a meeting with my family. Because, you know, I had already decided to make this decision after seeing them, you know, drain his lungs. I mean, that was just like the worst thing ever. And I, you know, and that's when they said he's not going to make it. And so I said, can you guys have a meeting with my family? And they said, sure. And so the next day they said, you know, we could have three or four doctors here, and they could ask us any questions they want. And they said, you know, we'll have the meeting at 10 a.m. And so most of the family came except one person. And that was that one person that was really not taking it well and not just, you know, right. just whatever. So you guys were all there, and you were there, right?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. And I got to, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when I spent my time in there with him and, you know, stroking his hair and, you know, just meditating with him, I remember telling him, don't fight. You've done enough. You're good. And as I was saying that, I felt, and I had forgotten that my grandma had passed away a year before, but I felt her like right next to me. And I kind of scooted thinking, you know, oh, let me let her in. And when I turned around, I was like, oh my gosh, grandma's dead. She's not. And I realized she's here for him. He's not alone. She's here for him.
Wow. Yeah. No, yeah. You've never told me that.
No,
that's,
I know.
Awesome. You know, it's, oh God, it's been 15 years and, you know, you think.
It doesn't get easier. It never will.
No, it doesn't. And it actually feels like sometimes it gets harder, you know, because you go through life and you see, you know, everybody else, you know, that's the same age as him going on with life and doing all the things that he should have been doing. And it hurts, you know, you're like. You know, his cousin Natalie is 6 months younger than him. And I see her, you know, when she got her driver's license, you know, you see on Instagram, she got a driver's license. She graduated from high school. She got a job. And I go, oh, God, you know, those are the things that Mikey should be doing. But, you know, that's not what happened. And, you know, it is hard and I do miss him. But, you know, I know that he's in heaven and he's with, you know, family, and he's with our Lord, and I'm happy that he's there and he's not suffering anymore, because to see him the last couple months and to see him, you know, to see him deteriorate was really, really hard. It was not, you know, even though, you know, you don't believe that he's going to pass away, but you see your child not, you know, doing the things that he was able to do, you know, a year before. And it was hard, you know, and, you know, I think I told you this not too long ago, but the closer, you know, right before he passed, I would say a couple of weeks before he passed, he was just really, really just, you know, all he did was just sit there. You know, he didn't, you know, I would try to talk to him and he talked and he, you know, but, you know, I had Sarah too. So I had to do, you know, I couldn't just sit next to him all day long. You know, I would sit there and I would be in the kitchen and just looking at him laying on the couch. And it was just horrible just to see him laying there. And you just, you know, connected to oxygen. And, you know, I forgot to say during this time, you know, he was having trouble breathing. Even with the oxygen, they had put him on a steroid. And during that time he just got so fat and he was so uncomfortable that I had told the nurse, you know, this is not helping. It seems like it's making him worse because he was just getting so fat. He couldn't even, you know, it just wasn't, he didn't look good. So
he was very swollen.
Yeah. Very, very swollen. And so they had taken him off right before he passed away and he started to lose the weight. But, you know, even with the steroid, you know, you see your kid getting swollen, laying there, you know, not doing anything. And, you know, I know I told you this and I don't really think I've told anybody yet though. You know, you kind of at that moment don't want him to suffer. You want him to go home. You know, you don't want him to stay here, you know, suffering. So.
And that's really coming from love, because it would be selfish to keep him knowing that he's suffering. So once he's passed, it's like, thank God, because now he's not suffering anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know how people will take that, you know, but it really was, you know, I didn't want him to suffer anymore. And I wanted him to be at peace and to go home, you know, with our Lord, to just so he could, you know, he wouldn't be suffering anymore here, because he just, you know, it was horrible. It was just it was bad. You know, I remember I would sit him up a few times and he would just fall sideways. And I remember, you know, 5 years old, I was having to stick him in a corner on the couch just to, you know, we would put pillows around him just to keep him up because he wasn't able to even sit up on his own. And, you know, the year before he was running around, you know, or a year and a half before, he was running around doing everything, you know, like a typical toddler.
Yeah, I remember picking him up from preschool and having to chase him down the field because he started running.
Yeah.
But he was just playful. That was his way of playing.
Yeah.
Now, did you, because they had told you guys that he had 4 months, did you make any preparations at that time?
No, because I don't think, and I don't even know if Mike would remember the doctor told us, but I remember the doctor told me. I don't know. We didn't, because I was, again, I didn't accept it. I was in denial and I really didn't think. And you know what, to be honest with you, I think he would have lived longer, you know, maybe a couple more months had he not got chicken pox and pneumonia. And right. He got chicken pox. I'll tell you how he got chicken pox. He got chicken pox because my mother came over and she had the shingles. And in her defense, she didn't want to come over. But I remember telling her, Mom, I really need help. You know, it was hard, you know, having Mikey sick and having Sarah, you know, need, you know, she was needy. And I like, Mom, please. And, you know, my mom got the shingles, I believe, because she was stressed out with everything. And so she, you know, she's like, I don't want to come over right now until they get, you know, until they go away. And I go, no, Mom, it's okay. Mikey's not going to get it. And I never ever thought, and I never even heard of that, him getting chicken pox from her shingles.
So, well, you also thought that he would be protected because he was vaccinated.
Oh, yeah. He had the chicken pox shot.
But it failed.
Yeah, it didn't do anything. And they say because his immune system was so low that it didn't. Anyway, so he got chicken pox, and then a few days, you know, maybe within a week, he got pneumonia. And then I feel guilty too. I'm like, I mean, I don't know how you get pneumonia, but you know, I remember taking him to the beach and I remember a couple of days later, he just wasn't feeling well. So I don't know if, you know, I don't know. So,
well, his immune system was so low that it could have been a simple cold.
Yeah. So he got chicken pox and pneumonia, and I took him into the hospital, and, you know, I think within 4 days he had passed away. And, you know, and I'll tell you the moment he, you know, passed away, I remember everybody coming that day after we had the meeting with the doctors, and they, you know, the doctor said, you know, he's not going to make it and you guys need to make the decision. And I remember the next day we said, well, we're going to do it the next day. And they wanted to do it the next day because they wanted to prepare their surgeon, because they were going to take a piece of his, brain, because they were going to do...
They wanted to do an autopsy.
Right. And they could only do it on him living, you know, he had to be living, I guess, at the time they did the surgery. So,
oh, they wanted live tissue.
Right, live tissue. So he had to, so the next day we decided to take him off the machine, and everybody came and said their goodbyes. And I remember we only had 15 minutes to spend with him after he passed away, because they had to take him into surgery right away. So I remember him, it was me, Mike, one of the ICU nurses in there, and his hospice nurse came. She came all the way from, she lived in Long Beach, and she went all the way to LA. And she was in the room when Mikey passed away. And I remember us sitting, everybody had said their goodbyes. So it was just us. And she said, are you ready? And I said, you know, we said, yeah. Whew. And they took him off the machine. They, you know, started to prep him. They took the tape off his mouth because he had tape on his mouth. I remember him having an indentation on his mouth because he had the tape on there. It was kind of tight for the last 4 days. And I'm not kidding, as soon as they turned off the machine, he was gone. You see his heart rate, it just beeped and then it didn't.
And it flatlined.
Yeah, it happened so quick. So he was only being kept alive by the machine. And I know this sounds really weird, but I believe in Mike too. We talked about it. We believed he passed away the day before.
I believe as well. Yeah. I think he was gone and the machine was just keeping his body alive.
Yeah, we think he did too. And I don't know why we think that. Well, you know, I think we looked in his eyes that night, the night before, and we just, you know, we had looked, you know, we would open his eyes and look at him. And you know, one time we looked in his eyes and his eyes didn't seem the same. And so we just felt that he was gone. But, you know, then they took him off the machine the next day. And I remember they asked us if we wanted to hold him. And I said, yeah. And I remember, you know, I remember them, you know, prepping him, you know, cleaning him up and everything. And she picked him up and he was five. So he was kind of, you know, he was still about they can pick him up. And I was sitting there and Mike was above me, standing right next to me. And they put him in my arms and she had him in my arms for a few minutes. And then they had to take him. Sorry.
Oh, no. It's okay.
So, and they took him. And we stayed in the room for a few minutes. And then I remember me and Mike walking out. God, that was so weird. And I remember us walking out, and I don't know where the hospice nurse was, because I remember us walking out of the room by ourselves. And I'll never forget this, a young couple. They were young too. They might have been around my age. It was a guy and a girl. The girl didn't say nothing. I don't remember her saying anything, but I remember the guy. We came out crying, and he looked at us, and he goes, "I'm so sorry." And he hugged Mike, and then he hugged me. And we said, thank you. And we walked into the room where our family was waiting. And I remember going in there and it was just, it was weird.
It was mayhem. It was bad.
Yeah.
Big Ray was there and having to kick people out.
Really? I don't remember that. I didn't even know that.
No, you guys didn't know. We got into it and Big Ray was there and he made sure to get everybody out. Big Ray is Mike's friend.
Yeah, one of Mike's best friends. I don't remember that. I never heard that, but I remember going in there and, you know, it's just so weird. I mean, we're the only ones in our family that, you know, in our generation that had a son that passed away. And it just was the weirdest thing, you know, and I remember going in there and we both walked into the room and we just looked up and I remember everybody just looked at us and, you know, I felt like, oh my God, why us? You know, at the time I felt, why us? But yeah, so that was it.
And how do you keep his memory alive now?
I love talking about Mikey. I talk about him. I visit him. I have tattoos that are in memory of him. I always talk about him all the time, you know, everything, you know, we celebrate his birthday. His birthday's next month. I don't know.
You often go to the cemetery and you decorate for him, like, yeah, especially during like Christmas time and birthdays and... Really? I think you do it for any holiday, don't you?
I do. I do every holiday. I still decorate his, you know, 15 and a half years later, I still decorate. And he's right next to his great grandma, the one who passed away a year before him. And so I decorate hers as well. And I've always have, you know, not on his birthday. On his birthday, it's just him. Yeah, I go and I, you know, decorate both, you know, areas.
And I'm sure she's loving it too.
Oh yeah, totally. I know that they're together. She loved Mikey so much. She really did.
Yeah, she did. And do you feel like he gives you any signs or does he come to you in dreams?
You know what? That's the weirdest thing because he never comes to me in a dream and I do want him and I, you know, I talk and he never does. I remember one time and it was right when he passed away. It was a dream, but it was almost like it was real too. And we had a fan in our room and the fan wasn't on. And I remember feeling like I felt the fan was on, but it wasn't. And I felt like a lot of wind just hitting me. And then I remember seeing, but I was, you know, my eyes were closed. I remember seeing someone in my room standing over me. And it was a older man. But I knew it was Mikey. It didn't look like Mikey, but it felt like it was Mikey.
I mean, yeah, it definitely could have been for sure. Yeah. Like, they're going to give you signs. So aside from that one time right after he died, do you feel any other signs that he may give you?
No, none. Never. I've never have. And it really is really, really sad. I wish I did. I will say that, you know, me and your mom, Mikey's grandmother, we were talking not too long ago. It was about a month ago, maybe. We were outside talking and we were talking about Mikey. And I mean, I can't even believe it was so weird. It was dark and a bird just flew right over us and then back. And it was a white bird. I don't know if it was a dove. I don't know what type of bird it was, but I know it was white. And it flew right above us and a little past us. And I go, Rita, oh my God, look it, there's a bird. And then it flew away. And that, you know, that was, I know that was a sign, but I never have him on my own. And it was, you know, with me and your mom talking about him. But on my own, I never, you know, I don't think I do. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that I do.
I do feel that he's around you a lot. He's around you a lot because I do get visitations from him and they're playful. They're very different from what I feel from my grandma. From him, he's very playful and that energy is so young. And I used to have him really strongly, I think I would say like the first 10 years, like even before having Sophia, I would feel him around and he would like crawl up on the bed and I would tell Mikey, you're scaring me. And then he would go away.
Really?
And, yeah, I would feel him a lot. And it's been a while. I don't feel him as often anymore because it's been so long. But when I do, I know, I feel that he's saying I have to be, especially like these last, what is it, 4 years?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially during these last 4 years. He tells me I have to be with my mom. My mom needs me. So he's with you.
Yeah. I don't feel him, but, you know, I want him to be with me. Even if I know he's, you know, if I don't feel him or I don't see any signs, I hope he's with me. And, you know, that's good to hear that he is with me because I do miss him. You know, it's really this year, next month, July 27th. He would be 21 years old. And it is so weird to think that I would have a 21-year-old. And, you know, the time, it's so weird because some days I'm like, man, 15 and a half years really flew by. And then other times I'm like, gosh, it's been 15 years. I've lived a whole life in that 15 years. So it's just, it's weird, you know, it is really weird. And, you know, but, you know, I'm sad and I'm sad because I miss him, but I'm happy because I just feel like I'm 15 years closer to seeing him. And, you know, that's what I want. I can't wait to see him and wrap my arms around him. And, you know,
that's a beautiful way to think about it. You know, it's 15 years closer.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So, you know, I mean, you know, I do get sad, but it's, you know, I try not to. Actually, this year, you know, on his anniversary, I was telling, you know, I told your mom and I told Sarah's aide because I'm really close to her. And I said, you know, this year it wasn't, I don't even know if I cried on his anniversary, on his 15-year anniversary, which is January 22nd. And I just felt so at peace. And I felt like, you know, I'm happy that he's in heaven and he's already, you know, he's there and he's, you know, with family members and with our Lord. And it was a different feeling from any of the other years that I've, you know, had to go through his death anniversary.
You felt more at peace.
Totally. Way more at peace.
Okay. Is there any awareness that you would like to raise?
You know what? I will say, I know that I was a young mother, you know, and I do remember going to the doctors and, you know, I remember them never believing me. And it wasn't until Mikey hit his head that everything was, you know, came out in the open that, you know, he had seizures. But it was just because the doctors didn't believe me. And I think it was because of my age. And I think, you know, a mother knows, you know, something's not right. And I think if there is, you know, if you don't think something's right, just keep on, you know, pushing it, you know, go to the doctors. Don't let them tell you like, you know, no, it's not this or no, you know, maybe you need to go to the dentist. I mean, whatever the situation may be, don't take no for an answer. You know, if you know something's not right, you know, something's not right. And that's, you know, we were kind of like pushed in a corner because they didn't believe us. And I believe it was because of my age. And I know Mike's, you know, older than me, but, you know, he's a little, you know, timid himself. So we tried to tell the doctors, you know, no, something's not right. And they just didn't want to hear what we had to say. Okay. My whole point to that is, you know, don't take no for an answer.
Trust your mommy gut.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Well, for my listeners that may want to see you or know more about you, where can they find you? What platform are you on? Where can they reach you?
I have an Instagram for my daughter, Sarah. And Sarah does have, she had, you know, she started to show signs of seizures when she was 3 and when she was put on medication and she was 3. And actually this was 8 months right after Mikey passed away, she started showing signs. And so she has seizures. She has vision loss, hearing loss. But she is going to be 18 this year. And she's slowed down a little bit because of her vision loss. And, you know, she's starting to get a little slower. But she's awesome. So I have an Instagram for her. It's Through Sarah's Eyes. THRUSARAHSEYES.
Okay. And that's on Instagram. And do you have a website as well?
I have a website. It's the same thing, throughsarahseyes.com. But I don't have it set up yet. I don't have time to put anything on it. So there is a website there. But right now it's under construction.
Okay.
But you can, you know, and I encourage you guys to go to see Sarah's website. You know, she is blind, but I try to do so much with her. I try to take her out and, you know, I know she can't see anything, but she could, you know, she enjoys going out and we go out a lot. So check it out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you being a guest and talking about such a hard subject. For real, it's really hard to talk about it, and for raising awareness. Yeah, if even though you're a young mom, it doesn't matter how old you are, if you feel something's wrong, you need to trust that mommy gut. Yeah. And really be an advocate for your child. Yeah. Because a doctor has 15 minutes with your kid. That's it.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much, and I enjoyed talking about Mikey, and I hope everybody enjoyed hearing our story. I know, you know, I cried a lot, but thank you so much.